For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson. It's Friday once again, meaning it's time for the Friday News Feedback. Here, as always, to help us out, our Discovery News, James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Guys, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Will? How's it going?
Doing well.
What's up, Will?
Nice to have you guys. Have a good week?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I was actually in a dinosaur dig in New Mexico.
Oh, excellent. Covering some Discovery News for us.
Yes.
Well, we'd like to introduce our guest judge here in just a minute. First of all, I'm going to tell how the Friday News Feedback works in case you're a new subscriber. Every Friday, we have James and Jorge join us. They give us their top three stories of the week, whatever they think is kind of interesting or entertaining or fun or whatever. And we invite a guest judge in to then select their favorite story of the week. And the guest judge can choose the story based on whatever reason they want to. They can tell us the stories they don't like or the ones they do like. But most importantly, we need to have a winner. So this is really a contest. And James and Jorge have been doing this for a few months now. What's the score, guys?
Jorge is up 8-4.
Okay.
He wins 2/3 of the time.
All right. I know. I always hate to ask.
Fast math.
It's a little humiliating for you, but
I know.
Anyway, let me introduce you to this week's guest judge. Paul Myers is here. Paul, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Will.
Tell me what you do. You, as most of our guest judges, work here at Discovery Channel. What do you do?
That's correct. I'm a writer producer with the new media department, and we create short-form content for all of our new media platforms.
Have you guys noticed a trend among our guest judges that they all sort of work in the new media division?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is
that the floor you're on, Will?
Yeah.
No.
Pretty much. They're the closest people I can find. We have a strenuous selection process for our guest judges.
Do you just lean out your door and yell, hey, who wants to judge Feedback?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. So, hey, we're going to jump right into it. I know you guys have some great stories for us, Paul. Feel free to jump in whenever you want. James, you want to kick it off this week?
Sure, I'll kick it off. I'm kicking it off in the University of Tokyo in Japan, where a Teruo Fuji is, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that name.
That's right.
But he and his colleagues are building a microfluidic chip, which they're hoping will nurture the first stages of pregnancy. And it's basically a chip that would make better in vitro fertilization. And they hope to create this fully automated artificial uterus in which the egg and the sperm are fed in on one end, and then an embryo comes out the other, and it'll be ready to implant into a human mom. The final goal is basically they found that by using this method versus the way that it's done now, they can actually increase the chance that eggs are fertilized. So they give the example of 50 fertilized eggs on the chip, 30 developed into early embryos, and you compare that to 26 for the current version.
All right.
So, basically this could help with people trying to get pregnant. It's, everything, every little bit counts, and this is one way, I think, to make that more successful.
All right, but along the way, human beings are still very much involved in this process.
Yeah, they are. What they're basically doing is just using these chips to better replicate the human uterus.
Okay, very interesting. Let's take it over to Jorge for his first story of the week.
Okay, here's my story. It's another one in the slow crawl to science fiction to follow James's. Is University of Florida researchers are developing a device, what they call a neuroprosthetic computer chip, that would be implanted under our scalp, on top of our brain, which would allow us to, fix diseases or to help paralyzed people to control a prosthetic device with their thoughts. And right now they're thinking that the initial goal of this would be for paralysis or for people who are who have epilepsy. And what they did is studying rats and mice, of course, is that they were able to use sensors, wires about the width of a strand of a hair, to attach signals of the brain to certain, motions of your body and things like that. They're not having perfected it yet, of course, for people yet, but they're developing. And they can kind of do it with humans at this point is by using something that goes over your head, but this would allow actually on the surface of the brain, and this is in the Journal of Neuroscience Methods.
Doesn't it seem like something bad is going to come out of that?
Well, here's funny you should say that, Will, because here's a great quote in this article was that one of the researchers said, the challenge is not so much the technology, but to use that technology wisely.
I'm right on it.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think? What are they going to do bad?
I don't know specifically. It just seems like,
You always go right to the bad nature of humans, I guess.
Yeah, it's my style. All right, James, let's take it back over to you. Second story of the week.
All right, well, I guess I'm just going to continue right on the right on the trend here. This study came out of Sinai Hospital in Baltimore, and they found that robotic telerounding may significantly reduce the length of stay of patients undergoing laparoscopic gastric bypass surgery. And what that means is that after the surgery is performed, I guess the surgeons will come around and they'll do sort of a post-op visit with the patients. And after that's done, then they supplemented that visit with this visit with it's a 5-foot-5-inch robot that displays the doctor's face on a 15-inch screen, and it's guided by a joystick from a computerized control station. It's got onboard two-way cameras, microphones, wireless technology, so that the physician can review charts and look at the lab work and X-rays and all that stuff. So basically, when you're done, the thing will just wheel itself in there, and then the space pops up there, and you have a little conversation about you.
If there's anything that you would want to wake up after a major surgery less to, it's a robot with a TV screen on it and a virtual
creepy
doctor face.
Yeah, well, no, it's not like Max Headroom or anything like that. No, I think it's like an actual, like, it's the doctor, you know, like it's like a iChat or whatever. According to the study, 77% of the patients who had these robotic rounds visit them were discharged on the first day, whereas the other patients they had to stay like a day and a third longer in the hospital. So I guess it's like, even though it's not the doctor in person, just having this extra attention, I guess, probably, you know, made it that much easier for them to get well, or I don't know.
Can the physician be filmed on the golf course?
Yeah, I know, right?
Just kidding.
But this thing was published.
I watched this drive.
Yeah. It was published in the July issue of the Journal of American College of Surgeons.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, well, let's take it back to Jorge. What's your second story?
Okay, I think I may have bit off more than I can chew with this story, so I'm going to wrap my brain around it.
I can't imagine.
I'm not that intelligent. Okay, some researchers out of Brandeis University are working on a formula that would allow them to predict the nature or how the behavior of how granular items move. So things like sand and gravel and marbles or powders and all these things that move around, kind of that shift around. They're trying to use a theory known as equilibrium statistical mechanics. And this is it's a mechanic that governs how molecular matter moves. But they're using it to predict the movement of things like sand. And this is mainly for what they say is things that to prevent jams. So we have these researchers studying how to avoid jamming and things like grain silos, where I guess, you know, grain is flowing and it gets stuck. And what I understand it is that jamming property is what allows us to walk on beaches, like where there's sand, because we're not sinking in it like quicksand, because sand is getting jammed underneath. So they're trying to figure that out, how it works, how these sand kind of just falls into place and gets jammed.
Isn't it just like a bunch just try to go through at the same time and get stuck?
So that's what you would think, but it's actually it's more complicated than that. And their reasoning is that there's an actual molecular science to why these things move around and shift around like that. And it's a dissipation of energy when things are shaken and stirred.
Sounds really complicated.
It does. And see, that's why I said I think it's a little more, but I just find it fascinating that there's actually a need for scientists to look into grain silos being jammed and studying why this happens. Other than just the obvious thing, which is, my reasoning would just be like, looks like it's stuck.
Does this only apply to grains? I mean, surely there must be another purpose to this study than grain silos,
but the
right?
The stuff they list, and this is another question I have, is granular materials. And they list sand, coal, cereal, ice cubes, marbles, gravel, sugar, and powders. Hmm. Can't anything be a granular item? Like if you're at Chuck E. Cheese and you're one of those ball pits, you know, where all the balls...
Yeah, that's a good
granular item.
That's a good life-size example.
Those things
or
are
larger.
Hilarious.
They are. I guess that what they're thinking, the places they say they can study this are grain silos, coal hoppers, and pharmaceutical manufacturing plants.
Mm. All right, well, we'll try to wrap our minds around that one a little bit. Paul, what do you think of the feedback so far? Some tough stories this week. Are you following okay?
I'm following fine, yeah.
All right, good. James, back to you. Your third and final story.
This is my third story is actually my favorite. This is out of MIT, and these people were looking at at fear and PTSD from like soldiers that were coming back, and they think that they've found a way to inhibit the kinase, which is an enzyme in the part of your brain that stores memories, to actually erase fear, or like the mechanism behind it. And what they found is that if they inhibit this particular enzyme, that at least in mice, that they can erase the fear that within these mice. So what they did is they had this environment where they would give the mice mild foot shocks, and then they would either inhibit this particular enzyme, or they would try and like kind of pump it up, and the ones that they inhibited forgot that they should be afraid. So they've like basically found where fear lives in your brain, and if they can figure out how to manipulate it, then it could have a big effect on the way that people deal with PTSD and other like extreme phobias.
Yeah, imagine a whole population of people who are not afraid of anything.
Right. It seems like in a lot of respects, trauma is a good thing in some cases.
Yeah. We're just all like, it's all like, remember those no fear shirts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't think they're like trying to completely erase everybody's fear of everything.
Yeah, but we're just jumping to the...
You know what would go away?
What?
Fear factor.
Fear of relationships.
That's a good thing.
Everybody, how do you think that would work on like the dating scene?
The ramifications are astounding. All right, well, Jorge, let's take it back to you and your third and final story for the week.
Okay, completely unrelated, but still on the topic of fear. Investigators are using a different approach to explain why people like being scared, like how you like going to see horror movies. And I guess the two common theories that are used to explain this phenomenon is that we're not actually afraid during the movie, we're actually just excited by it. And the second explanation is that we're willing to endure, you know, the brief terror in order to get like that euphoric sense of relief at the end. But what they're saying is that horror movie viewers are actually happy to be unhappy, and that what they found is that people experience both negative and positive emotions simultaneously and may actually enjoy being scared, not just the relief of the threat when it's removed. And as the author puts it, it's the most pleasant moments of a particular event may also be the most fearful. And granted, this doesn't apply. What they say is that there has to be a sufficient psychological disengagement from the situation. So it's not like we're actually enjoying when we're actually really afraid. You know, if you might be going through something, you know,
on some level, you know,
you're not enjoying it. But if in the, you know, sitting in a theater, you know, if you're watching Saw or something like that, you're happy to be unhappy at that moment is how they explain it.
The first time I ever saw The Exorcist, I was unhappy to see that, and it still scares me. And
this guy would
is the freakiest movie.
This guy would say that you were happy to be freaked out by that.
I would take issue with that, because that is a horrifying movie.
All right, great stories as always, guys. Paul, now is your big moment in the sun, and we ask you to... I'll quickly review the stories, and then you can choose your favorite ones based, again, on whatever.
Great.
So the stories this week, we heard from Jorge Ribas. We heard the future of medicine, insert chip, cure disease. Interesting story. Why do people love horror movies was his second story. And Jorge's third and final story, staying out of jams, all about a theoretical physicist and grain silos, something like that. James, his stories had to do with one having to do with robots and doctors doing their rounds robotically. Also, a chip that's going to be a microfluidic chip that will help people get pregnant, actually. And finally, erasing fear or erasing trauma could help with PTSD. Paul, some pretty interesting stories.
Yeah.
Any thoughts initially?
I love the horror movie one. I grew up on slasher and horror films, so that they have a special place in my heart. So I have to say, yeah, it's intriguing. You mentioned The Exorcist, which most people think is often rated as one of the scariest films. I think the AFI did a top 100 scariest films. I think it was number 2, with Jaws being first. And, you know, that it's just interesting in the genre of horror, because you know, there's some thrilling films that would definitely fit into the category of people enjoying being scared, and then there's films that are kind of sick and, you know, make you feel not happy. So that's just intriguing, purely based on this, you know, idea of different kinds of fear and why what motivates us to go into a theater. And sit back and be entertained.
So you've jumped right in, and that's your favorite. That's it.
I can't tell.
You said you liked it a lot.
Yeah, that's up there. I also like the chip. I'm a sci-fi geek too, so the chip in the brain, the sort of neural interface story, is pretty intriguing. And I kind of follow that sort of field a little bit, and I know there's been work over the years done with restoring sight to blind people where they've had chip interfaces in the brain. There was one with a guy who was a quadriplegic who could actually move a cursor around with his thoughts. It was very similar technology where they had a chip with very thin wires, you know, actually implanted, and he was otherwise unable to move. And it seems like they're making, you know, progress with that, you know, every day.
All right, so our guest judge bringing us a few news stories this week. Unprecedented. Maybe he's trying to join the reporting team. But, okay, so we know it's going to be one of Jorge's stories because those are both his, so this indecision is probably killing these guys. You got to get, well, actually, it's not anymore. It's Jorge who wins. But you got to pick one.
I got to pick one. Gosh.
It doesn't really matter, by the way.
I would go with the...
How about the... Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah, sure.
How about the IVF baby one?
You know, that didn't seem earth shattering to me because it's marginally improving on an existing technology.
I know. I'm just trying.
Yeah, I would say, in the interest of pushing forward the boundaries of science, I'd say the neuro cyborg chip would have to be the winning story.
The chip that could, in fact, possibly cure disease. All right. Well, well thought out. I like your approach, your personal interest and fascination with horror movies and fear. But that did not win out over the microchip. Either way, they were both Jorge's stories. And James, despite a last-minute attempt there to interest our guest judge in one of his stories, which didn't already happen, and he had the entire feedback to do that, didn't work out. So I'm sorry, James.
No, that's congratulations. I think, Jorge, that's a two-peat for you now, right? Or is it a three-peat?
I think two, because I think... 2 weeks ago, you won.
Yeah.
So it's 9-4 now, and thanks for some great stories this week, guys.
Cool. Thanks.
I do want to thank our guest judge, Paul Myers, for coming in and delivering his judgment on the stories this week.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Great to have you here, and guys, thanks once again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
And for the Friday News feedback and Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.